analysis. That's what you get from the other guys. But not here. Not now. Not ever. This is the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA for a look deep inside the game. The Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA is broadcasting live from Spectrum Field in Clearwater, Florida, and is brought to you in part by SEPTA, BCWSA, Rob's Automotive, Vince Siriani and GMH Mortgage, Marriott Suites in Clearwater Beach, Harris Comfort, Penn Community Bank, McCaffrey Supermarkets, Peruzzi Auto Group, Keenan's in North Wildwood, and the Southern Ocean County Chamber of Commerce. We now go live to Spectrum Field in Clearwater, Florida for the Baseball Insider Show. Now, here is your host, John Brazier.
Welcome to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. I am John Brazier and joined this week by Greg Murphy. Murph, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I am good. Now, we normally do the show after the games on Sunday.
Yes.
We are, because the team is away, we are doing this game, currently taping it. So if you're listening to this on Sunday, this is following the Saturday game. And Murph, I gotta say, it wasn't pretty. It was not pretty. It was a 13-8 loss to the Pirates. It was 3 hours and 25 minutes. There were 27 hits in the game. There were two errors. It was an ugly game, to say the least. A lot of, probably more foul balls than I've ever seen in my life.
There was a little bit of everything in this game. There was some poor defense. There was some good defense on both sides, but there was a couple of errors that cost the Phillies early. Lots of home runs. I think the Pirates hit three, the Phillies hit two, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe one. Frank Franco's grand slam, but you're right. It was one that the Phillies are going to file in the category of, we don't need to rehash this one for very long. Let's forget about it and get back to work on Sunday and moving forward, because you know what? You're going to throw a clunker in every once in a while, and they threw one in on Saturday.
Well, and not just on the field, because and I'm not saying you, but you actually did play-by-play today, right?
Yes.
But the clunker,
I threw a clunker in there as well.
No, not you, the clunker. I think the clunker was your man on the sidelines. I was taking your spot. Jim Salisbury, I think, had a rough day today. He forgot, supposedly. I shouldn't really throw him under that.
Too late.
But he did. He did kind of have. He didn't get the promotions right, which is not his fault. He does the one day where he's doing sideline, and he's got to remember all the different promotions. So
I've done that that day for the last 5 years. We try to let the folks back in Philadelphia know what's happening, you know, throughout the year with the great giveaways that the Phillies have back at Citizens Bank Park. And it's a lot of information. You know, you have sponsors' names, you have dates, you have games, and you have items to describe as well.
Right.
And we thought Jim did a great job.
And he did it with under pressure, because, again, he's not used to, being our marketing shill for promotions. All right. Murph, let's bring on our first guest.
Okay.
Our first guest is Steve Potter. Actually, he's been on the show before down in Fantasy Camp. So Steve is not only a fantasy camper, he brought his whole family to Fantasy Camp most years, but he's also a prolific author, and there's probably nobody that knows our farm system outside of the Phillies. Unless you're a Phillies employee, there's probably nobody that knows our farm system better than Steve. Steve, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
All right. And so obviously you've been to every spring training game.
Every single one.
Every single one.
I've seen them.
I'm a season ticket holder for spring training, and I spend every day down at the complex as well when there aren't playing games.
So, and you've written this book. It's very voluminous. Can I say that word? Voluminous. Book that details every game in the minor leagues from last year, correct? Yep. What's the name of the book?
It's called The 2016 Phillies Minor Leagues, A Fan's View. That's how I write it from my perspective. It covers every affiliate in the system, every game. It's a recap of every game, quarterly analysis of the team, player analysis. There's about 50 pictures of players from a good photographer that covers Lehigh Valley's Iron Pig, Cheryl Purcell. And it's my perspective.
Going to a lot of these games in Double A, Triple A, Single A?
We went to every park this past summer except Lakewood. We didn't get to Lakewood, and I didn't get down to Dominican, but I'm going to go down and see the new facilities,
which is apparently beautiful. You know, you picked a good year. I mean, if you're going to cover the Phillies minor league system, 2016 was a banner year in terms of what the different organizations were able to do. All kinds of playoff berths. You know, you had the Bash Brothers that were knocking home runs out at the Double A level at a record clip. It was a little lucky that you picked 2016, right?
I write a blog. I write a daily blog. But as the season was going on, what you just said is they had the highest winning percentage of any major league club with affiliates in North America, 595 winning percentage. And I had actually researched that and sent it to Jim Salisbury, and he wrote an article about that. So I figured it was a historic year. I teased Joe Jordan down at the complex, how are you going to top that?
Yeah. But you know what? You look at some of the talent that they have, they just might. You never know.
Wealth of talent.
Now, Steve, you've covered, obviously, last year, as Greg alluded to, guys like Dylan Cousins and Rhys Hoskins and, you know, a lot of the guys that had big years last year, Ben Lively. Who are some of the guys, because I've talked to you off the air about this, who are some of the guys, since you really watch all these games, who are some of the guys in the lower level that people might be very excited about?
People should remember the name Franklin Colome. He's a big right-handed pitcher, number one type stuff. All the scouting reports say that, but I've seen him throw. And he brings it 95-plus. Another kid, Sixto Sanchez, that pitched in GCL.
I've heard that name a lot, yeah.
Mauricio Lavera is another Dominican that gets it up, rushes it up 100 miles an hour. You saw Alberto Tirado a little bit in big league camp here.
Even the Ben Revere trade.
Yep. So a wealth of Dominican and Venezuelan talent that they've heavily invested in Latin America. That's what's coming from what I see.
Have you seen the Ortiz kid? The kid.
Jalen Ortiz. I was there last spring. He hit one over the trees on the backfield, which for a 16-year-old is phenomenal. And I went up to him afterwards, man, you really got into that for a 16-year-old. And he said, sir, I'm 17 years old. So it makes a big difference.
Yeah, well, perhaps. But he's something special. And did you get a chance to see Mickey Moniak at all?
I've seen Mickey play, yeah. He does really good down at the complex with the fans that swarm him for the autographs. He's very cordial. His dad's been in camp the last few days. I have seen him play. He's Christian Yelich, that type of player, has those skill sets. He's somebody to be excited about. Last year's draft was, to me, one of the better drafts in baseball. I think the way I look at the system, you've got the AAA, AA level that's more immediate, which is very good, but you've got another layer that's coming. Lakewood maybe this year could be stacked with a bunch of teenage guys that really have a wealth of talent.
And who are some of the guys in the draft? Obviously, Gowdy. Is the second round or our second pick?
Cole Stobie,
the third pick. Now all three of those guys, didn't they play on an AAU team together?
Yeah, there's a group of them. They played in the U.S. Nationals together. But there's also a group of guys that played in California together. Whoever's the scout now, California is doing a bang up job. You know, you got Bailey Falter from the year before. The Josh Stephen, who's with the 11th round pick that got big bonus money. There's about five guys that played from Little League on together, which is, I think, is unique. That's a book idea of mine.
There you go.
we were talking last show that, you know, a lot of the names when you hear minor leaguers, you don't know the names unless they're, you know, ballyhooed number one pick or second round pick. So it's interesting. When Ruben made a lot of those trades and when he traded Ben Revere, you know, we get Tirado back and we get Jimmy Cordero back. You know, we don't know those names, and all you see from a Phillies fans' perspective is we're trading Ben Revere, and we got two no names. Or when we made the greatest trade Ruben made, is the Roberto Hernandez trade, and we got Valentin, who was out there playing today, and we also got Arano.
Arano, big arm, yeah.
Right, who's another big arm. So it's interesting. We got Nick Pivetta, who pitched for the Italian team, who's one of our prospects. We got him in the Papabon trade. Marlon Byrd, that's how we got Ben Lively. So again, all these names when they came in. All we knew were the names that were going out. We're saying, oh, who's Nick Pivetta? You know, are they basically throw-in guys?
Now, you know, none of those guys have made that next step to being contributors at the big league level yet. But what is so great about having depth in the minor league system is, you know, you're not looking for 10 of 10 to come up and make an impact. If you can get 3 of 10, you know, baseball's all about being around 300. If you get 3 of every 10 prospects to the big leagues and they're able to contribute, you're going to be a pretty good team. And that's, you know, we've seen that. Obviously, we saw that in the era with you know, when Barrel came up and then Jimmy and those guys. And we're starting to see it now with some of the guys, Michael Franco and you know, guys that came through our system, Freddie Galvis and guys like that. And some of the names you just mentioned, you know, if a couple of them hit, you're right. That's going to be terrific.
Well, Andy McPhail's philosophy and Matt Klentak is that you're right. It's a numbers game. So there's going to be guys that you're expecting to do well, and they might fail or they make it hurt, or guys that come out of nowhere. But if you have the numbers, especially in pitching, if you have the numbers, and Steve knows our system better than anybody, that hopefully we can, you know, with that AAA team, Steve, that basically look at that rotation in AAA. Yeah. I mean, we could have It could be Mark Appel. It could be Adam Morgan. It could be Alec Asher. It could be Jake Thompson. It could be Zach Eflin. There's a could be Pinto. There's a lot of guys that could be in that rotation. And every one of those guys I mentioned either have some major league experience or, you know, an up-and-comer.
And you also, the other avenue of pursuit is that you could package some of these guys and go out and get the elite player, the marquee player, which I think has been discussed. So having depth is a good thing.
Yeah. So what's your next book idea?
Well, I really think that the Lehigh team's going to excel this year. So I think I'm going to do a profile of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. It's their 10th anniversary with the Phillies. They put some investment in the park, new field, new scoreboard. So I'm going to spend some time up there. I was teasing some of the guys down there. They should win 90 games. They play 140, so that's a tall feat. But they won 84 last year at Lehigh. So that's what I'm going to target.
It's going to be fun. And are you coming back to fantasy camp?
Yes. I got the itch. The last 2 years I've been able to bring my two sons, my son-in-law. It's fun. There's no way to describe it other than that.
You even brought your daughter-in-law, right?
2 years ago, brought nine of us. There was nine.
Wow, and, good for you.
The banquet's really cool, too, is that the banquet, I was humbled to win the Tug McGraw Award for inspiration. I'm a brain tumor survivor and a vocal cord cancer survivor. And to go up on stage and bring all of my family up, that was cool.
Oh, that's great.
And well-deserved.
And well-deserved. Congratulations. Tug McGraw, did you ever work with Tug? I'm sure you did stuff with him.
I knew Tug a little bit when he became one of us. Became
right.
Part of, I mean, obviously I grew up idolizing.
He did Channel 17, right?
Yeah, but when he joined the media, I got a chance to spend some time with Tug and get to know him a little bit. And you're not going to find what a character. I mean, I think character is a perfect word to describe him, but he had the heart the size of Philadelphia, and he was a wonderful guy.
And you know what? When I think of, obviously, yesterday was St. Paddy's Day. Again, we're taping this, so if you're listening on Sunday, we're talking after the Saturday game. But yesterday was St. Paddy's Day, and I think we wear the green uniforms.
He was, yeah.
Because of Tug.
We do.
Tug made that suggestion and
yep.
The inspiration. And, you know, Tug is all about it. So he was one of my all-time favorite guys. I helped him plan the 20th, I guess it would be the 20th anniversary of the 1980 championship. And he is a big idea guy. And he said, all right, we're going to build a float. We're going to have a parade down Broad Street. And there's a lot of people looking at him like, Tug, it's the 20th anniversary. But you know what? They had a float. They had a parade. And they had Sunday the Academy music. And he did the reading of Casey the Bat.
I remember
that. It was
that.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, congratulations, Steve. And good
you.
Luck on the book. And we'll probably have you on the program at some point, and certainly down to fantasy camp. So
yep.
The 2016 Phillies Minor Leagues, A Fan's View by Steve Potter. And Steve, where can fans get this?
It's available at Amazon. It's also at Citizen Bank Park. It's at all the minor league affiliate stores. And they can. I also have a direct website. It's book.philliesbaseballfan.com.
Or you can hang out on the concourse here, and Steve can bring you a copy like he did to me.
I'm happy
go.
To do that.
Well, we're not all special like you, Murph.
No, I was honored, and then I proceeded to forget it up there because we were doing an appearance up there. But Steve was nice enough to get it back to me, so I'm looking forward to diving into it. As you said, it's what is it? It's
voluminous.
Voluminous.
Yes.
It's thick.
Yeah. It's 600 pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
A lot of research. All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining our program, and I'm sure I'm going to see you in the next 2 weeks down here in spring training.
Thank you very much.
All right, Steve Potter. Coming up on the show, Murph and I are going to dissect this 3-hour and 26-minute game. You are listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA on WBCB.
We now return to Spectrum Field in Clearwater, Florida for the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. Now, here's your host, John Brazier.
We are back to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. We are here at Spectrum Field. Again, we are taping the show after Saturday's game, so you were listening on Sunday. So this is following a ugly long game. Murph, it was you did the play-by-play.
Uh-huh.
Now, how many times have you done play-by-play down here?
This year?
This year and then through the years, because I know it's got to be a thrill every time you do.
Absolutely. It's a challenge as well, you know, as I'm still learning, going through the paces. But this is my third game this year, and as Tom's off doing the NCAA tournament, third game this year. And I guess probably I've done both regular season and spring training games now since I've been a part of the broadcast team. I've probably done about 20 games. And ask me how many I've done my entire life of baseball.
How many games?
About 20
have you done
games.
Right. All right. So, as you know, that I on WBCB on the station, I did the play-by-play on radio for the Toronto Blue Jays game, And you know that I butchered the home. What I don't know if I butchered
it. I don't think you butchered it.
I didn't butcher it. I came up. I was asking everybody what should be my home run call, because
right.
it's very easy if you grew up in Philadelphia. The last thing you want to do, and it's the most natural thing to do,
that
is to
ball
go,
is
to go
out
to,
of here.
Right, is to imitate Harry Cowell. Yeah. So I was deathly afraid that I was going to do that when somebody hit the ball out of the park. So I was asking everybody, what should my call be? And I was getting input from front office people, from ushers, from fans, to Matt Klentak. Matt Klentak was the last one to tell mm-hmm. me. And he said, oh, just say sayonara homerunna. I don't know what that's about. But so I wasn't prepared. And when Tommy Joseph hit the home run,
right.
I luckily left out the homerunna part. And I just yelled out, sayonara. And it wasn't even like a dramatic home run. It wasn't like to put the Phillies for a lead. It wasn't a blast over the tiki bar. It was kind of like, it wasn't a home run, but it was, you know, kind of cleared the wall.
So has Matt Klentak heard that call? Has he heard it?
He hasn't heard the call. I'm going to have him listen to it. But I did tell him that I took his suggestion and ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you guys are probably having the most fun, because especially Tom McCarthy. So whenever we all work in the same area, so whenever you guys leave, Tom McCarthy's like, all right, see you, Murph. See you, Ben. See you, L.A. Frazier.
Sayonara!
So, I guess yeah. it's after the World Baseball Classic, right?
I will tell you that I did not use sayonara today, because, you know, that's your signature call.
Right.
I don't wanna,
and
I don't
everyone knows it now as my signature call.
Yeah, it is the Frazier. So, I didn't use that. I think I just yelled gone a couple of times today.
See, I hope you didn't do a Scott Graham, though.
Goodbye, gone.
Wasn't it gone goodbye?
Gone goodbye, yeah. No, I didn't do that either.
And what's Jim Jackson's call?
I don't know. I'm working while Jim's calling the games. I don't know what his call is.
All right, let's talk about today's game, and then we're going to bring on Ryan Lawrence. But today's game, Jeremy Hellickson pitched today. And you know what? He did not get helped out by the defense. He went five innings pitched. He gave up 9 hits. 8 of them earned – 8 runs, 5 of them earned. A walk, 3 strikeouts. Home run. It was a tough day in the sense that, A, the sun was out, so Franco missed a ball. We missed a couple balls due to the sun. No excuse, but Hellickson was getting hit around, but he got a lot of pitches in. So,
yeah, I think it was a mixed bag for Hellickson today. You know, early on, he looked pretty good, and you know, we saw this the last time he was out on the mound, too. He kind of was cruising for a little while, and then boom, 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 the Orioles, I think it was the Orioles, took advantage of Hellickson and scored some quick runs. We saw that again today. Add in the fact that, as you said, the defense did not play very well behind him, giving the give a team a couple extra outs an inning, and you know, things are going to start to snowball on you, and that's exactly what happened. He missed some spots, he left a couple pitches up, he started getting hit pretty good. I thought it was interesting, though, despite all of that, his spot came up in the order in the bottom of the fourth, and they put kept him up, and then they brought him back out in the fifth because, look, this is spring training, it's about getting your work in. By the end of the day, he had thrown 80-some pitches. And, you know, ultimately, if you look back, probably say kind of a mixed bag for Hellickson. But, hey, you know, he got his work in. I don't know what he was trying to do with some of those pitches. You know, maybe in the regular season he doesn't throw, you know, a certain pitch in a certain count. But today he just was working on something. So it's hard to really tell. You know, Ryan probably got a chance to talk to Hellickson after the game down in the clubhouse, so maybe we can ask him what Hellickson thought of his day. But
but as you said, the veterans are working on stuff.
So a lot of them are.
The young guys are basically fighting for a position, so they're playing as if it's game mode, it's game time now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you never know what they're working on, whether Hellickson is working on a changeup or whatever he's refining. I know. Like for instance, Eichhoff is working on his changeup.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Certainly, pitchers. There are pitchers that are working on pitches. There are pitchers that are working on breaking balls in general. There are pitchers that are working on changeups, like you said. The young guys are just trying to throw strikes and get guys out so that their numbers, you know, are something that the coaching staff sees and are impressed with. So yeah. And on the flip side, the other team's doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, you might get a pitcher that comes up against a guy who says to himself, I want to see 7 pitches this at bat. No matter what happens, I want to try and see 7 pitches.
Right.
And you know, and he ends up taking a walk or, you know, striking out. After that kind of thing doesn't happen in the regular season. And that's why spring training is a little bit about getting your work in and a little bit about the results. Because at the end of the day, the results are a little skewed based on the circumstances.
Well, let's talk about some of the positives, because there were some positives. We had Roman Quinn had a double. You know why? You know who's swinging the bat great is Aaron Altair. And here's a guy that's you know, he's not handed to him. He's got competition. I mean, he's certainly not handed the job. Now, he's on the 40-man roster and plays great defense. Might be our best defensive center fielder. But, you know, he's had an injury-filled career. He didn't completely light it on fire last year. So, again, he's battling with Coughlin, with Nava, who's having a very good camp, with, obviously, Brock Stassi, who can play first base and outfield. So he's got some competition, but it seems like, you know, it seems like his bat is really starting to go.
Here's what I would say about Aaron Altair. Aaron Altair is going to be on this team.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He is your, at this moment, coming into camp, and he certainly has done nothing to lose the job, he's your fourth outfielder.
Right.
Michael Saunders and Howie Kendrick will be your corner outfielders, and Dubois your center fielder. But I agree with you. From a defensive standpoint, he is probably the best defensive outfielder that we have. Therefore, you're going to see him lots late in games. You know, if Phillies have a lead, defensive replacements for one of the corner outfielders. But the way he's swinging the bat now, you know, he's starting to make a case for
more playing time.
Maybe I play a little bit more. And I don't think, now I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth, because watching him, I don't think he's a product of the spring training poor pitching or spring training. I think he's swinging a hot bat.
Well, I think that's people look at numbers, and it's tough to look at numbers without seeing it in person. So when you see Aaron Altair, you can tell when he's getting outs, he's hitting the ball right on the barrel and he's squaring up. So you know, I guess that's where the scouts or the coaches are looking at things. So even if he's hitting, and I don't know what he's hitting, but let's say somebody in general is hitting about
315 after the double he hit in this game. So, you know, one thing that he's done, and that's theirs suggested it to him, and, you know, give credit to Aaron Altair for listening to Matt and following through. But, you know, he was a guy whose hands used to be up by his ear, above his ear, you know, a little bit of a bat waggle kind of thing. And now if you watch him, his hands are down by his shoulder, very quiet, and he's just loading and getting through the zone very quickly on a level plane, you know, kind of, you know, back up the middle kind of swing. And he told Matt the first couple of times when he was swinging like that he felt as he was just kind of slapped the ball. He's like a slap hitter. Well, then all of a sudden something clicked, and on the backfields he hit a monster home run. And Matt said, "Feel like a slap hitter now?"
Wow.
And he said, "No, not so much now." And since then, he hit a big home run yesterday. He almost came 2 feet away from hitting an opposite field home run today. So a little change has seemed to make a big difference in Aaron Altair's offensive numbers. So, you know, hey, he's a guy that came in last year with the starting job and lost it because of injury. And now he probably doesn't have a starting job yet, but who knows? He could play himself right back into that starting lineup.
And you mentioned little change, Brock Stassi. Now, Brock Stassi, same thing. He made a tweak, and he does a leg kick now with his right foot. And here's a guy who was MVP of the Eastern League 2 years ago, and last year did total solid season. And all of a sudden now he's, you know, again had a great spring. And I love how it's almost like golf. You know, if you can make a little adjustment, that one little adjustment can completely change your game. And in hitting, whether it's working on your timing or where your bat is, I mean, it's pretty amazing. And Matt's getting a lot of credit, and I'm sure some of it I think he's done a fantastic job.
Well, ultimately, you got to give the credit to the athlete themselves who make the changes, work on it, and do it. But
or it could have been guys, you know, from the Triple A, like Sal Rendy or some other guys that are working on it, and all of a sudden they're working on what they developed in the minor leagues, and now it's starting to click.
Yeah, you think about a guy like Nick Williams, who's been in the organization now for, you know, a year and a half now, and he's worked with all of those guys, and they've been working on a couple of different things. And Matt came in to spring this year and reinforced what he's been working on, and it looked like it started to click in Major League camp this year for Nick Williams, which is a great sign, because he's a guy that they have some high hopes for coming down the line. But you're right. It takes a village to change a batter.
Right.
I don't know if that's a saying, but maybe we can make a T-shirt.
You made it
there. Yeah, there we go. But it does. And, you know, ultimately these guys have to buy in. And I think Nick Williams has bought in. It looks like Aaron has. Brock Stassi, as you mentioned. So,
all right, do me a favor. Explain to the listeners, because you have a 40-man roster. And if players have played over a certain amount of experience, they have to be on the 40-man roster. Or if they're not, they could be exposed to the Rule 5 draft. So explain what Pete and Matt Klintak are up against, because there are some guys that are doing well that aren't on the 40-man roster, and the implications.
Yeah, and honestly, it's very confusing, and you almost have to be staring at the 40-man and the non-rosters to really kind of work out the numbers. But in a nutshell, just because a guy like Brock Stassi is having a really good spring, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to come north with the team and be part of the 25-man roster. And you say, well, why not? Right now, he certainly appears to be one of the 25 best guys. Well, the problem is that Brock is not on the 40-man roster. So therefore, in order to put him on the 40-man and on the active roster, you would have to take somebody off the 40-man roster.
And on the 40-man roster, there's a lot of prospects.
Absolutely.
That you're not going to take off.
That you can't
Drew
take
Anderson
off.
That was in camp.
Right.
Nick Williams that was in
right.
camp.
So if you take them off the 40-man roster, then they are subject to go through waivers.
Yep.
And you could lose them that way. So it becomes a numbers game. So do you say, as a general manager, you say to yourself, let's say Brock Stassi, for instance, you know, here I have a guy on the 40-man roster like Roman Quinn, let's say. Do I keep Roman Quinn up and put him on the 25-man roster and send a guy like Brock Stassi down? And this is a bad example because you're not going to lose Roman Quinn to this, but let's say you have a veteran who's on the 40-man roster, and you say to yourself, well, I can keep him on the 40-man, bring him north, put him in the roster, and then if he doesn't succeed in April, early May, well, we can cut our ties and bring up Brock Stassi and put him on the 40-man in that spot. If you do it the other way around and Stassi falters, well, you probably have already lost that veteran. He's cleared waivers. He's
right.
moved on, or he hasn't cleared waivers. He gets picked up and moves on. So it becomes, you know, how much depth do we have? How much do we want to risk losing this particular guy? So, you know, there's only there's a finite amount of spots for these guys, and that's why it's not always a clear-cut decision on just straight out how they're playing in spring and going out to win a job.
That was a very good explanation.
I don't know if it was.
Very good explanation for a very complicated subject, Murph. You tackled it right there.
Thank you.
All right, coming up in the show, we're going to take a break. We're going to have Ryan Lawrence. Ryan was in the clubhouse today. Ryan's a beat writer that covers the Phillies every day. So we're going to get what they said in the clubhouse, and we're going to get some detailed analysis from Ryan Lawrence. You are listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA on 1490 WBCB.
We now return to Spectrum Field in Clearwater, Florida for the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. Now, here's your host, John Brazier.
And we are back to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. We are at Spectrum Field, following the game on Saturday. You're hearing this show on Sunday, but we are on the road, so we are following the Phillies game today. Unfortunately, we took one on the chin, as we had mentioned, against Pittsburgh. It was without further ado, it was an ugly, ugly, ugly game. It was a long game. But I guess the fans got treated to 3 hours and 25 minutes of baseball. And put your mic on, hit that, yep. It was a beautiful day, right?
It was. It was very nice. Yeah, yeah, we're complaining about weather in Florida. But, you know, this was probably the nicest day we've had in the last 3 or 4 days. So, you know, the fans had that, if for nothing else.
You're listening to Ryan Lawrence, who's from PhillyVoice.com. You have to read his stuff. And on Twitter, you are. What's your
Ryan Lawrence 21.
Ryan Lawrence 21.
Correct.
How about Instagram, Facebook Live?
Pretty much everything is Ryan Lawrence 21. Instagram, all right. Twitter, all the social media stuff.
Are you harking back to your days when you were 21?
My birthday is on the 21st of February. I just had a milestone birthday, 30. No, not 30. I wish. But yeah, no, I just liked the number as a kid. So
there you go.
Did you have the 19th anniversary of your 21st birthday?
I believe that's right. Yeah, correct. Wow. Yeah.
All right.
I was told there'd be no math.
There'd be no math on it. All
right, my math really fast.
Well, you're a Clemson grad. Ryan, now Hal and Northwestern. Now, how about that? Your Northwestern team is still alive.
I know, but I'll be a little bit. I was just talking about that in the press box, that if and when people will be listening to this, they'll know the result of that game because of the power.
Right, you're right.
But it would really kill my bracket if Northwestern wins, because I have Gonzaga in the final.
Right, so you're rooting against
have Gonzaga in the final, so I'm rooting against your Northwestern.
Who do you have them against?
UCLA.
That's my final.
There we go.
Who do you have winning it all?
Gonzaga.
Oh, I have the opposite.
I have Gonzaga winning too, and I went with the theory that nobody's going to pick Gonzaga.
My theory.
Now I find out three guys have the same theory.
Yeah.
Well, you're blowing my brackets here. And I am tied for first so far, just letting
you
know.
So am I.
I don't even know where I am because it's too early to look.
It is too early to look.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, now you've been covering the Phillies for how long?
This is my 10th season, another milestone. Yeah.
10th season.
Yeah.
So
They won the World Series the first year. It went pretty well.
Do you enjoy spring training? I mean, I'm sure you do. How do you not? But it's also a lot of people don't realize it is long work days. You guys are down there early in the morning.
Yeah. In the last 2 days, I've been here particularly early because the way that the minor league clubhouse access works for the media is it's open between 7 and 8.
Okay.
So the last 2 days, I've gone down there for some stories I'm working on. And, yeah, they're long days. And, you know, again, I'm not going to complain being in Florida. But yeah, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, we don't have our feet kicked up and drinking a, you know, a little cocktail with an umbrella on it. That's not exactly how it works.
What Murph does.
Well, yeah.
That's a little closer as to what I do. Look, I will say this, unsolicited. The beat writers across baseball, but the Philadelphia beat writers that cover this team, work incredibly hard to bring back the information. You know, I travel with the team. I'm everywhere. But we do it very differently. We were able to fly the charter, and we're leaving after games. And these guys are doing it through commercial airports, and the hours are long, and they do an excellent job. So, I often sit back and wonder, man, oh, man, how do they do it? It is a long season, but they do, and they do it well.
Yeah, what I will say, and I have said this to several people to flip that around, is that you guys don't get much time off in the regular season where, you know, the broadcasters, you guys are working literally every game, where at least we do get the occasional day off or series off. But yeah, I mean, we work in baseball. It's great.
Yeah,
I couldn't
agreed.
Ask for a better job. I love working in baseball. But yeah, they're long hours down here, but, you know, you also get to see some palm trees, and if you're lucky with daylight savings, you know, the sun before the end of the day on the beach. So
now, you're
nice.
Working with a team right now. Obviously, there's a lot of young guys. We've got some veterans, Hallie Kendrick and Michael Saunders. But do you enjoy working with a team that has a lot of young guys, an up-and-coming team, or do you like that kind of veteran-laden? I would imagine from a beat writer point of view, the veterans might be a little tougher because they've been through there, done that. They feel like they've talked about their career. Young guys are more excited, maybe, to be interviewed?
Yeah, there's good and some bad. I mean, back in the if you could break my 10, really 9 years, so if you break the first 9 years of covering the Phillies, there's been really three different things. You had the best team in baseball for, you know, they went to two straight World Series. They won one of the World Series. Then you went to the team that was full of veterans and underachieved, I guess, and had some injuries, and then you went from the youth movement and the rebuild. And I would say that, you know, when the team's going well, it's really fun to cover veterans, and,
right.
and it's really fun to cover a team when they're doing well.
They want to talk.
And it's just fun. Every night at the ballpark's exciting. So, you know, you're writing about exciting games, you know, games that are won and lost in the ninth inning. It's fun. Then those middle 3 years, you know, not so fun because you'll have veterans that signed here, you know, hoping to win, and doesn't go very well, and they're not always easy to deal with. And then you flip it, and now we have, you know, the youth movement where they've traded some guys and they've brought in younger guys. I think this is a really easy clubhouse to deal with because, yeah, you have kids that are trying to establish themselves as big leaguers, and that's fun. They're happy to be here, and, you know, they're easy to talk to, easy to deal with. I mean, there really isn't – it's hard for me to find a guy in the clubhouse that – and I'm not going to name names anyway, but that there really isn't a difficult guy in that clubhouse, you know, from – I mean, I'll name good names, like, you know, between Tommy Joseph and Freddie Galvis and pretty much everybody on my pitching staff, Jared Eichhoff, Aaron Nola, they're just really easy guys to deal with. Cameron Rupp. Again, you can go down the list. It's a great clubhouse, and that's a good thing when you're doing this every day for 6 months.
Yeah, and I think over the last, you know, 2.5 years, the organization has really decided, as we rebuild with youth, we're also going to try and rebuild with good character guys,
sure,
which wasn't always the case a couple of years ago. So, I think you're seeing the results of that. Yeah, you're bringing in some veterans, but you're bringing in a guy like Michael Saunders, who has fit right into that clubhouse and brought that leadership and that, you know, Canadian, you know, cheer into the clubhouse. Howie Kendrick is another guy like that. So even when you're going out and kind of piecemealing and getting some of those veteran guys, they're making sure that they're guys that are going to fit into this group and not, you know, upset the apple cart as this team tries to grow together and, you know, turn the corner and start to win some games.
Who are some of your favorites over the 10 years they've had to cover? Favorites as far as maybe from an entertainment value or just a personal relationship, or for whatever reason, some of your favorite guys to cover?
Brad Lidge was just the ultimate professional and just a really good guy. And the thing with him that stands out is he had, you know, the best year that you could ever hope for as a reliever 1 year, and then had, you know, one of the worst years that you could, you know, ever not hope to have the next year. And he didn't change as a person. He was, you know, there to talk after everything went well in 08, and he was there to talk when things didn't go well after games in 09. And, you know, so he stands out. Raul Banez, also just a complete class act. Trying to think. I mean, there really is, there's a lot. Most of the relief pitchers seem to be always really easy to deal with. Scott Ayers, a great guy. Always nice to see a guy like him back.
Did you work with Chad Durbin?
Yeah, Chad Durbin was favorites. Chad Durbin. Thinking of position players, Carlos Ruiz is just awesome. Just,
you don't get any nicer than Chooch.
No. Chooch may be the most popular guy up and down throughout this organization that I've had the pleasure to be around. Like, everybody loves Chooch. I think Ryan Howard was, you know, when you consider all that Ryan Howard had to deal with, all the external stuff, the injury that he didn't cause, you know, that just happened to happen, you know, in, you know, trying to live up to the contract, and it was hard to do after the injury, and then having to answer the questions that you have to answer when you're making all that money and you're not performing. Yeah, he had bad days because that's hard to deal with every day.
Right.
But on the whole, like, you factor all that in, really a nice guy, class act. Shane Victorino is a guy that you know, it's easy to forget because it's been a while since he's been around. But, you know, to me, just always a high-energy guy. And it was always kind of it was fun to deal with him because there would be moments, you know, when it's a long season where he would have bad days and like the rest of us. But just a guy that always was full of energy, kind of made you smile. So, yeah, there's a bunch of them.
I'll throw one other name, and I know you covered him as well as I did, but whenever people ask me the question or a similar question to what you just asked, there is one guy that over the last, I don't know, 6 years, I guess, with the Phillies organization that – to me, was the most talented person I've ever covered, who also was the nicest guy. You put the two parts together, mm-hmm. and he's a Hall of Famer on both sides, and that's Jim Thome.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he, in my opinion, a first ballot Hall of Famer, but you were not going to find a better person on a daily basis to deal with than Jim Thome. You put those two together, and I don't know that you can build a better athlete to cover than Jim Thome.
Well, it's funny, when you ask the question, Lidge and Thome were at the top of my list. And then when I started talking, I just forgot about Thome. And the other one that I think that should absolutely be mentioned is not a player, so I'm cheating a little bit, but Charlie Manuel, I mean. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you that, you know, dealing with Charlie, and now you're dealing with Pete, who's also fantastic.
Yeah,
work,
we're kind of lucky that way. I mean, we've had two managers. You know, and Sandberg was a little bit different of a case. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame player. And again, he was in those middle 3 years when it wasn't the easiest team to deal with.
Right.
And Rhino just has a different personality. He's a little bit more
reserved.
Yeah, where Pete is a lot like Charlie, very outgoing.
Great sense of humor.
Yeah, great sense of humor, easy to deal with, always has something funny or witty to say after games, which for writers is important.
Yeah. I'll tell you something funny on Pete McCannon. So I had to go down and get him, excuse me, for a radio interview a couple of days ago. So I go down to his office, and, you know, I spent some time in his office, but I don't know his office, so I'm in there, and I said, all right, Pete. And so he opens up this door, and I'm right behind him like a puppy dog, thinking that we're going out in the hallway and we're ready to do the interview. I follow him right into the bathroom, and I got about three steps into the bathroom until I realize I'm in the bathroom, and he's looking at me like, Frazier, what are you doing? I'm going to the bathroom. Can I go to the bathroom?
You're going to be his, like,
nope, I got to supervise that, Pete. Yeah. I wonder if Pete had something funny to say after Saturday's ball game.
Ooh, yeah, you know, he basically wanted to forget about most of the game.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, and then Michael Franco will be fined a dollar by actually the whole team. The way it works with Pete's system is the whole team will have to pay a dollar for Michael Franco failing to have his sunglasses on in
the top of his head.
That may have been mentioned by my broadcast partner about 65 times today during the broadcast.
I was guessing so. I wasn't listening, but I saw it on the screen, and they kept showing Michael Frog. I was thinking,
he's got his sunglasses on his hat. I guess that's a good thing.
I'm sure Larry Anderson mentioned as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on. PhillyVoice.com. Again, how can they find you?
You can find me at PhillyVoice.com, on Twitter at RyanLawrence21. And, that's pretty much it. So, yeah, go to my website, read my stuff. Keep me employed.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. This is Ryan Lawrence. All right, coming up on the show, we are going to have the merchandise guru, Scott Brandreth, who is today we unveiled all the promotional giveaways. You can go on phillies.com to see. But if you're listening right now, you're going to find out exactly what some of the hot giveaways we're doing. You are listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. We are live from Spectrum Field in Clearwater, Florida.
We now return to Spectrum Field in Clearwater, Florida for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here's your host, John Brazier.
We are back to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA at Spectrum Field, following Saturday's game. You're hearing this on Sunday, but we are recording this because the Phillies are away on Sunday. We just talked to Ryan Lawrence. We talked to author Steve Potter. Obviously, I've been talking to my man Murph. But right now, in our last segment, we have Scott Brandreth. And Scott, you might have heard him on the radio here and there. He's in Philadelphia, but he's been in with the Phillies a lot for a long time. And he is our merchandise guru. He is in charge of, when you see all the giveaways that we do at the ballpark, he is in charge.
He's a good person to know.
He's a great person to know because he's got, he even had Murph, when he got married, because he's got all the connections with the vendors, he had a bobblehead doll of he and his tuxedo, right? And his wife Patty in the wedding dress.
Yep.
And it was a dual bobbing head doll.
And that was our wedding favor.
Yeah, that's
so
very cool. Yes.
Well, Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so today we unveil the giveaways. So we did it with, you can see it on Philly.com or Phillies.com.
Phillies.com, yep. They're going to have the John Brazier, Scott Palmer show.
Right.
Talk about our giveaways.
You might not recognize me because I've grown a beard over the spring. But let's talk about some of the giveaways. Let's go maybe the first month.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about some of the highlights. We don't have to go through everything. But opening week is always a big week at the Phillies.
Yeah, we're starting off guns a blazing. You know, we open on a Friday this year, April 7th, first time in a while, opening on a weekend. So Nemours opening day, we're gonna have a knit hat, free for all fans. Last year we did a red hat with Nemours. It was kind of a cool visual because the ballpark's a sellout and everybody's wearing red.
See it red.
So we have a red knit cap for everybody.
Does it have a pom pom? Murph wants to know.
It's old school. It's got the pom pom.
It.
It's got the Phillies block letters across the front. And then the next night was McDonald's opening night, our first night game of the season. And I think it's the 11th year in a row that we're doing a T-shirt that night. So we have a great T-shirt for all fans, thanks to McDonald's for that night. Excuse me, not for all fans, 15 and over.
15 and over.
Excuse me. And then the next day, it's kids opening day, thanks to the Cavity Busters.
Doc Bresler's.
And we kind of broke the budget on this baby. We're doing a hooded sweatshirt for all kids 14 and under that
day.
This
literally might be the best giveaway we've done. It's a quality hooded sweatshirt. I mean, look at that. It's a legitimate sweatshirt.
And as I talk here and hold this stuff up on radio, but I need to do it for my own props. But it's a hooded sweatshirt with a drawstring, a kangaroo pocket, as they call it. And that's for kids 14 and under on April 9th.
Okay. So then in April 2, we have the big guy's birthday.
The big guy's birthday. It's the 40th season that the Fanatic will be running around Philadelphia, which is amazing.
But that means he's not 40 because the Fanatic is like Benjamin Button.
He's
kind of goes backwards.
He's 8.
Or he freezes at 8. Which one is it? Is he freeze at 8 or does he go backwards?
Well, I don't think he can go backwards because then he'd be like negative something.
Right, you're right. So he's basically a perpetual 8-year-old.
He's 8 again. Aren't we all?
We are. All three of us are. That's for sure.
That's true.
It's not just the Fanatic.
Right. Correct. Yeah. So the Fanatic's birthday, again, Citizens Bank stepped up for that. That's Sunday, April 23rd. And we're doing a Fanatic baseball cap for kids 14 under that day. It's kind of a two-toned hat with a white panel on the front with a big image of the Fanatic. Right there on the front. It's kind of oversized, so the kids will look pretty sporty that day.
My 9-year-old is going to love that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know who's more excited about it, Tom Burgoyne or my kids, but it's probably Tom.
Well, let's stay with the Fanatic. Now, that's all basically in the month of April.
Yep.
But staying with the Fanatic, of course, you have to have Fanatic giveaways. You have a couple other highlights.
Yeah, well, Murph experienced this today in the booth when the Fanatic barged in, and he just really just pushed his own giveaways, which we're not surprised about. But July 30th, thanks to Community Energy, it's tough to describe, but it's a bobble body where the Fanatic perpetually moves right to left because it's solar panel. It's got a solar panel on it, so it'll be moving all the time in your kid's locker or on your kid's dresser. So that is a really cool thing in July. And then,
well, so hold on. So the Seattle Mariners can't do that with their mascot, right?
Why is that?
Because it rains every day in Seattle.
Wow, that's good.
Right? I see he did that.
See how I did that? All right, but that is a soul. Right now we have the Clearwater Sun beating down on it, and it's moving.
He's still going, yeah. So that is a really cool thing. And then I don't mean to talk about back to school right now, but I will. August 27th, ShopRite is back with our back to school promotion, and it's an old school clock. We kind of stole the Mickey Mouse thing with his arm, so it's a Fanatic on the face of the clock with his arms as the hands of the clock. And I was so happy today during the broadcast when the loud bell went off.
Did you set that up?
I didn't, but I wanted it to happen, and it It actually did.
Did
it throw you off, Murph?
No. We were trying to get it to ring. So it's got the, you know, it's got the two big bells on the top.
Right.
Old school alarm clock with a hammer in between that just goes, ba-da-da-da-da-da, you know, to wake you up. And it's like you see it on the old TV shows and they bang the top of it and throw it out the window. It's so cool. It's bright green and blue. And we tried to get it to go off during the broadcast. Well, the Fanatic was in there and his big paws, he couldn't get the switch on. And then they were scoring runs left and right. So we kicked the Fanatic out. We put it in the back of the room, and wouldn't you know it, about 5 minutes later,
it goes off,
and, you know, it woke John and I up, and right. We continued on with the broadcast.
It was perfect.
It worked out well.
Now, you have some technology giveaways.
Yes,
right?
We have three giveaways this year that we just tagged with @Phillies, which is our Twitter handle. Is that right?
@Phillies, yeah.
Yes, okay. So we have texting gloves. We have a cell phone wallet, which John is using right now to help him. It's got, you know, it's, you stick it on the back of your cell phone, you put your credit card in there, and it's got a little stand to prop up so you can watch college basketball is what you're probably watching on that. And then a tech kit as well that has earbuds in there. It's got a couple different chargers, one for the car. So those are over two in April, one in May, and they're all kind of branded @Phillies. So it's a kind of trying to get that younger crowd out to get some tech stuff.
All right, we'll go over one more. You have the hooded, or you have the not hooded.
It's funny. This is a retro weekend. So this year we always have fun with retro night. So July 7th is our retro night. We're turning back the clock to 1983.
That's the year I graduated high school. I'm going back.
We're going way back. Yeah. So that night is also Xfinity fireworks. So we already have a built-in good crowd for retro night. So the fireworks are going to have like, you know, Springsteen's Born in the USA,
right,
and, you know, John Mellencamp.
Lee Greenwood.
There you go.
Xfinity fireworks.
So that is on Friday the 7th. On Saturday the 8th is the Toyota Mike Schmidt bobble figurine. That's for all fans. So that's him and his home run trot after his 500th home run.
Yeah, this is to commemorate the 30th anniversary of his 500th home run.
Yeah, April 18th.
At Three Rivers.
1987, yep. And then, so we're not doing it on the exact date, but it's the same year. And then we're finishing up, and the players will be wearing the 1983 uniforms on Friday and Sunday. So then Sunday, we're doing a HERS Retro Phillies pullover, kids pullover. It's a kind of a little quarter zip pullover in the Columbia blue and maroon.
I love that. The hooded sweatshirt's great, but that pullover's cool.
Yeah, this will be good for the kids on Little League, too. Yeah.
Well, Scott, you did a bang-up job, as always. And again, fans can go on Phillies.com, and you can see the video. You can also obviously go online to see the promotional. And we didn't even talk about it. At some point, we'll talk. Maybe we'll have you back, talk about all the theme nights, because this is all the stadium-wide, but there's a lot of theme nights that all the first 500 fans, if they buy it through the theme nights page, can get a lot of different things, like a Grateful Dead t-shirt or a country hat.
There's over 35 theme nights this year, so something for everybody.
All right, well, thank you very much, Scott. And that wraps up today's Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. I'd like to thank Scott Brandeth, one of my guests, Ryan Lawrence from PhillyVoice.com, Steve Potter, author extraordinaire, of course, my co-host, the Murph, Greg Murphy, Ed Pandino here at the studio, and back at the studio, my man Jack. We will be back next Sunday for our last spring training show following the Pirates game. We play the Pittsburgh Pirates again next Sunday, so that'll be our last spring training show. So go Phils, and Scott, as the great, late, great Harry the K says,
out of here.
You've been listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, an exclusive presentation of 1490 AM WBCB, and heard around the world at WBCB1490.com.